This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Vice President Kamala Harris answered, yes, I do, when asked on a CNN town hall this evening if Donald Trump is a fascist. This following comments from Trump's longest serving chief of staff, John Kelly, saying the same to the New York Times.
Certainly, the former president is in the far right area. He's certainly an authoritarian, admires people who are dictators. He has said that.
Kelly also saying that Trump repeated suggestions that Adolf Hitler did, quote, some good things. A terrorist attack at an aerospace company in Turkey, at least five people killed. Turkey says it's responding by hitting Kurdish military targets. The Secretary of Defense confirms North Korean troops are in Russia, the U.S. monitoring to see if they're used in the fight in Ukraine. An E. coli outbreak linked to McDonald's Quarter Pounders. Dozens sickened in at least 10 states. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Much of the Badger State is still in high fire danger. In fact, in some parts of central and northeastern Wisconsin, the risk is now considered very high. Here's Brittany Merlot.
There have been 72 wildfires across Wisconsin in the past week, burning a total of 925 acres. Most of them were started by equipment like mowing operations, RVs, and more. But burning debris, even when it's been banned, has still been happening. Don't do it. One spark, even as small as a cigarette butt, can start a fire.
We're getting into cold and flu season. Extra hand washing and dry air can lead some to develop eczema. Dr. Abigail Tao, a Spirus dermatologist.
People with eczema tend to have more inflammation at the skin layer. So it presents with dry, itchy, scaly, rashy skin.
She says it's critical to take care of that dry skin. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is Civic Media News.
The Todd Alba Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for matinee on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of a working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Had a great conversation about inflation. I know, sexy, right? Who doesn't love having conversations about inflation? Actually, I kind of do, because it's this world where there's so much that we seem to think is reality that I don't believe is. Like this person that I was talking to seemed to think that the Oval Office comes complete with a switch, that Joe Biden can, at the flip of a switch or an executive order, you know, say that we want more inflation. That this was a policy choice by the Biden administration to create more inflation to harm the working class. I mean, this is a scheme. This is a fairly nefarious plot, if this is true, and one worthy of investigation, according to my friend. I think it's a lot easier than that. I think it's simpler. I think corporate America saw a great opportunity at the end of the pandemic because people had stored up their, had pent up their consumption. You know, we were all locked away for a while. We got a little bit of extra money through unemployment in some places. So we were doing okay. And then it was the gunshot went off and everyone went and, you know, did what George Bush said to do after 9/11. Go shopping. And what did we shop for? Well, you know, everything. And things started going up. And we realized that our supply chain, fairly tenuous at best, fairly broken, splintered, heavily dependent on other nations. And well, as we learned in economics class, when there is a shortage of things, prices go up. And when there's an artificial shortage of things, prices go up even more, thus the price of fuel. And what this person threw up at me is that, you know, during the pandemic, when at the end of Trump's term, he claimed that gas was a buck a gallon. I don't remember it getting that low. I remember getting to like two something, but I don't remember a buck a gallon. At that case, I may have started investing in tanks to store it. And I think a lot of speculators would have as well. I remember two something. But it also, you know, what this person seemed to forget is nobody was driving. And once you start pumping oil, you can't just turn the spigot off. It doesn't work that way. You've got to put it somewhere. So they were basically, you know, giving it at cost. What they learned after the pandemic was they could raise the prices through the roof. We would complain about it. We'd blame Joe Biden. Idiots would put stickers on the pumps going, Joe Biden did that. One, it was really corporate America. Because, you know, in times of great demand, corporate America, as we're told in our textbooks, as we're shown on the graphs, as the Econ 101 professor, you know, let us know that a good entrepreneur is going to ramp up production to meet that need. It's the efficiency of the market. It's how everything flows together. You know, as demand, you know, tapers a little bit, you know, they slow down production. As more demand, it ramps it up. Well, we didn't really do that. Biden gave out tons of drilling leases and, well, they didn't drill on them. Now everyone goes, well, Keystone XL. Keystone Pipeline, which is not accurate. The Keystone Pipeline is working just fine. It's pumping tons of oil right through it every single day. It is fine. It's the XL portion of the Keystone Pipeline that didn't get built. And that was to take the dirtiest possible oil, the tar sands oil from Canada, ship it right through the middle of the U.S., right out of the country, somewhere else to be refined, because we don't have refining capacity for that kind of dirty oil. It was never going to touch American shores. It was never going to benefit us. But somehow, the right has extrapolated us not building this pipeline so that a Canadian company can go right through our backyard to make international profits as somehow harming us. But Rick, oil's an international commodity. And that amount of oil was never going to help us all that much. Now, I said from the beginning, you want to build a refinery in Chicago, ship it to Chicago, make sure it stays here, lower gas to buck a gallon where my friend thinks it is. Okay, let's talk. But that wasn't the plan. And this idea that this guy had in his head about all of this stuff is a lot of fake news, a lot of misinformation, a lot of alternative facts. Like he was telling me that, you know, inflation is outpacing wages, and that's not true. Inflation-adjusted wages have reached a record high and are growing at a much more rapid pace than wages. That's reality. GDP is up. The unemployment rate is down, even though this guy seems to think nobody wants to work. Nobody. You know, young people don't want to work, he told me. And yet, oddly enough, young people, the prime age group, that 25 to 55 group, they've got jobs at a higher rate than they had before the pandemic. Yeah, let's think about that for a second. The pandemic era between 2007 and 2019, that group of 25 to 54-year-olds, about 77.2% of them had jobs. It's now over 79.3%. And you go, well, how is that possible? Well, that's possible because guess what? More people are working. There are more jobs. And there are some better jobs. And as we reshore manufacturing, as we build infrastructure, as we do more, there are going to be more jobs. And understand that the private sector has grown faster and more profitable for workers as well. But you can't convince people of things that they don't want to be convinced of. So when I said, but your metric of the stock market, all-time high, Trump used to trumpet the stock market as his greatest accomplishment. And I'm glad that Biden doesn't, because for me, it's not a metric of how my life is doing. It's a metric of how rich people are doing, of which I am not one. What I want to know is, are we rebuilding our infrastructure? Are those jobs good prevailing wage jobs? Are they jobs that are done under a project labor agreement, so I know I'm getting the best value for our tax dollars? Are those workers local workers, or are they transients coming through doing a halfway job? That's what I want to know. I want to know if the dollars we're spending on corporate America are being reinvested here and not just lining their pockets through stock buybacks. That's what I want to know. And in all of those metrics, the ones that I think are important, we are heading in the right direction. We are on the right path. But come November, if you throw Trump back in there, all that stuff gets wiped out. And we end up with a scenario of someone who has a record of being a, well, less than scrupulous contractor, someone who has been accused of wage theft and overtime violations and filed multiple bankruptcies and all kinds of things that you don't really want from an executive. And that's why I just find it amazing in the moment that we're in that anyone would even consider Donald Trump to be a person who would be the quote-unquote champion of the working class. Well, when he had his 4 years, he did literally nothing to help. Oh, but Rick, the tax cuts. You mean the tax cuts that are going to go away next year? You mean those tax cuts? You mean the tax cuts that he didn't make permanent, but the tax cuts for the billionaires and corporations were permanent? You mean that? Your great champion of the working class said, no, we'll sunset those tax cuts after my second term. Let someone else deal with the fallout. Understand, that was strategic. That wasn't an accident. So here we are in this moment, in a moment of decision. What are working people thinking? Are we seeing the kind of investments that this administration has made? Are we seeing them happening in our neighborhoods? And are we giving them credit for it? And when we come back, we're going to talk with Brent Booker. He's the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, about how he's out pounding the pavement, talking to his members. And I got to imagine pointing out the fact that a lot of the jobs they're working on are because of that Biden-Harris team and will probably continue under a Harris-Walz team. And you got a question. What will Trump do? Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the days to election time ticking down, and it's all pedal to the metal. You know, yesterday on the program, we talked with D. Taylor from Unite here in Las Vegas and how his union is out knocking on doors, some 2.5 million. I'm going to get the 3.5 million by election day. We're talking to leaders from all across the country who are mobilizing the members, because this election, and I know we hear this a lot, this is kind of a big deal. This is a make or break, in my opinion, kind of election. And here to share some thoughts of how big of a deal this is, I've asked Brent Booker to come talk with us. Brent is the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. He's in Milwaukee doing just that. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate the opportunity again to speak with you and your audience.
Good to see you in Chicago. Good to have you back. What's been going on since Chicago? What have you been up to?
Chicago seems like it was like some part of me seems like it was 6 days ago and some part of me seems like it was 6 months ago. But look, we've been focused on talking to our members, meeting them in the community, at their doorsteps, on their job sites, at union meetings, and anywhere and everywhere between. We've really concentrated our efforts since Chicago and meeting our members where they're at and talking to them, having a two-way conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I had a conversation recently with one of your members that I found quite interesting. It was one of those, well, you know, what have they done for us? What has Biden done? What's Harris done for us? And I said to him, I go, look, have you ever seen, you know, anything about Monty Python? Have you ever seen the bit on what have the Romans ever done for us? And they go in, well, apart from medicine, irrigation, health, roads, cheese, and education, and baths, and Circus Maximus, what have they done? Nothing. And it's kind of that kind of a skit when I'm talking to this guy, because I'm going, probably the job you're working on.
Yeah, and that's what's been great the last 3-4 weeks for me personally. I've been on job sites. I've been on infrastructure job sites. I've been on job sites funded by CHIPS and Science Bill. I've been on, tomorrow I'm going to a job site that's funded by the IRA, and all the things in between, right? And I love it when they ask that question, because I go up and meet individually with members and ask them, hey, you know, here's who we've endorsed. Where are you at? You know, are you at the same place? Are you someplace different? And I get that question a lot, Rick. Hey, what have they done for me? And I love it when they ask that question, because I can tell them that Kamala Harris, you know, cast a deciding vote for the American Rescue Plan, which was pension relief, so that when they do retire, they don't have to worry about anything. That she negotiated the infrastructure bill, $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. That she helped negotiate the CHIPS and Science Bill that's brought 1 million jobs back into the United States for manufacturing that we didn't have previous to that. And she cast a deciding vote on the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, to make sure that union jobs are created through hydrogen, nuclear, offshore wind, onshore wind, solar. So when they ask me that question, I can give them that answer and point a straight line from federal legislation to literally the paycheck that they're receiving every Thursday or Friday, and able to educate and inform them and tell them, you know, look, the last thing I want to do is talk about politics, but it's important. And this election is important. And to be able to communicate with them that the CHIPS and Science Bill, when I was on Michigan last week, that is a direct correlation to them getting their paycheck, to educate and inform them has been good for me to also hear from them, and hopefully good for them to hear exactly why their union endorsed Kamala Harris and why we're doing everything we can to get her, you know, elected here in 15 days or 14 days, whatever the day count is today.
Yeah, but you know, to stick with the Monty Python frame, what has the Biden-Harris team ever done for us? I mean, because you can go through all this and it just, does it sink in?
You know, pensions sink in and overtime sinks in. And that's been my experience. When I talk to some of our older members and talk to them about pensions, that they're getting close to their retirement, that she saved their pension and make sure that they have their pension, they resonate with that. They understand the importance of a pension. And then to contrast, you know, what Kamala's plan is for bringing new members in through the PRO Act, through the pro-union legislation, as well as the contrast of Project 2025 and what Donald Trump is talking about with overtime and taking overtime away from our members, taking health and safety standards away from our members, taking registered apprenticeship away from a member. Be able to talk to them about the contrast between the two of them has been, you know, eye-opening for them, as well as an educational and hopefully inspirational to get them, those who need to register to vote, to go register and then vote for, you know, the candidate that their union endorsed.
But Brent, I heard Donald Trump talk about overtime here in Lancaster just the other day. He was saying they're not going to tax overtime.
I get that a lot, and I love it when they say that too. It's easy not to tax something if you're not going to give it to somebody. Listen to his words. And he said it in speeches in Pennsylvania saying, I hated paying overtime. I brought other people in. I shouldn't be saying this out loud. When I was a developer, when I was a builder, I would bring other people in so I didn't have to pay overtime. Look at Project 2025. when you see that overtime doesn't get paid after 160 hours. So, of course, it's easy to say I'm not going to tax it because I'm not going to give it to you. And I'm going to bring other people in, or you're going to hit your 160 hours and then I'm going to cut you off until the rest of it. So don't believe me. Believe him. Those are his words. He said those things. And I believe him when he says that.
Yeah, I tend to believe a lot of the things that just comes out because he's got this impulse control problem. Maybe you've noticed it. Maybe you noticed when he was talking about Arnold Palmer's putter. He kept saying, I just have to say it. And it's just, again, it's one of those things where I don't know that I want a guy who just has to say it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's things that he says. I believe it. He's saying the quiet parts out loud.
Yeah.
He's saying he's going to fire workers who are on strike when he's talking to his billionaire buddy, Elon Musk, who's funding all of these dark commercials that are out in all these battleground states that, hey, man, I wish I could do what you did and fire all those workers, you know, that are on strike. That's the difference between these two candidates. Kamala Harris walks picket lines. Donald Trump drives his golf cart across the picket line and then talks about firing the people who are actually standing together, unified in solidarity to fight what's right for them.
Now, I'm sure you've noticed, as a lot of the union leaders I've talked to have noticed, that the mainstream corporate control media loves the fact that the Teamsters did not endorse and that they point out the fact that a lot of union members are registered Republicans and there is a divide within labor. And I would argue that we've got a lot of Republican members in the labor movement because economically they do so well because of the union. This should be one of those moments, in my view, that... the records should matter. And I remember the 4 years under Donald Trump, as I know you do as well. Are you reminding people as you're out there saying, look, we tried to organize. We organized during that period. It was tough. We tried to represent. It was tough. Are we reminding people of how bad the Trump years were?
That's what I'm doing on these job sites. I've talked to hundreds of our members in the last 2 or 3 weeks and talking to them about he has a 4-year record. And in his 4 years, he appointed corporate lawyers to the NLRB. He appointed corporate lawyers as the general counsel of the NLRB. The first thing that Joe Biden did on day one, literally the first thing he did, was fire the general counsel to the NLRB because he saw all we want is a fair shake. We want a level playing field. We want the opportunity to be able to argue our case in front of a fair judge to say, hey, this is the worker's viewpoint. This is the member's viewpoint versus the corporate viewpoint. Donald Trump and his NLRB sided with corporate America every single time in the 4 years he was president. He tried to destroy registered apprenticeship. He talked about infrastructure week, infrastructure month. And look, we were the first ones into the Oval Office. The building trades went to the Oval Office literally on January 21st of 2016 to start 2017 on his first day of president saying, we want to work with you. We want to build things with you. And we gave him every opportunity. This isn't red or blue with us. This isn't Democrat or Republican with us. We want people to get things done. And Donald Trump talks an unbelievably good game. And he resonates with our member with his rhetoric and, quite frankly, the way he talks. But at the end of the day, after 4 years, there was no infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
It was, I'm going to do that next term. Endorse me now. And literally, he stuck his finger in my chest and said, you endorse me now, and I will give you an infrastructure bill. Well, where the hell have you been the last 4 years? At the same time, he was destroying registered apprenticeship. At the same time, he was putting corporate attorneys in to bust labor unions. And that's his record. And that is a stark contrast to what Kamala Harris has done in her last 3.5 years, 4 years as vice president.
I mean, the symbolism, and you brought up the general counsel of the NLRB. It's a story I tell quite often. A guy named Peter Robb, who was instrumental in the decision to fire the Patco workers. You go back to August 4th of 1981, when Reagan fired the Patco workers. That was a defining moment in labor history. That was a defining moment for the movement. It's kind of the acceleration of the decline of union density in this country and the assault on our standard of living and on wages and health care and benefits and retirement and all of that stuff. And that's the guy you choose to now be in charge of the NLRB. I think it spoke volumes and sent that message again, another shot that was heard across the boardroom that it was open season on workers.
Yeah. And look, there's no doubt the acceleration was 1991 with Ronald Reagan, the acceleration of our increase of our way the general public is looking at labor unions, the 70% approval ratings. is because of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. The last 3.5 years, they have been incredible partners to the middle class, to labor unions, to LIUNA, our members, through the legislation they passed, putting us at the head of the table to be in rooms with cabinet secretaries to talk about the future of the middle class, the future of our country. So we are firmly entrenched because of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for a trajectory of growth where we've been, you know, we look from 1981, you know, for the last 20, 30 years, it's been, you know, it's been tough to organize. It's been, you know, it's been stacked against the worker. And you have politicians, you have presidents like Donald Trump who put corporate America over workers. That now that tide has changed and we need to continue that. And I know that Kamala Harris, when she's president, is going to keep us at the seat at the table, at the head of the table, to build the middle class out, to build labor unions up.
So I know you're out there explaining to your members why Biden, Harris, and now Harris Walls are great for them. You know, but the question then becomes, you know, what about the rest of us? And I argue that by your members having better wages, better health care, better retirement security, better working conditions, it trickles down to the rest of us, actually trickles down. And there's a major reverberation effect across not just your industry, but all industries. When those kind of jobs are possible and that kind of standard of living is possible, it becomes more of what we demand, I think.
Absolutely. And you know, the rising tide raises all ships, right? And when organized laborers, when LIUNA members gain a health benefit or an increase in their health benefit, gain an annuity, a pension, gain wages, real wages, that brings everybody up. That brings all the laborers, whether they're unionized or not. And look, you know, oftentimes we've vilified non-union laborers. We've got to look at them. Those are our future members. Those are our future brothers and sisters that we want to bring into organized labor. We want to bring into our union. We want to highlight them. We want to talk about their stories, how they became a member of this union, use them to organize a non-union. And I'm convinced that we're going to be able to do that with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz and have that environment where it's okay to join a union. And the general public is there, 70-80% approval rating. For unionization, 70-80% approval rating. When you see some of these big national strikes, that the American people are siding with the worker. They've had enough with corporate America. They've had enough with people taking advantage of workers. And look, we want corporations to make money. We want our employers to make money. We want to partner with them. We just want our fair share of the pie.
Yeah, I say I want the company I work for to make enormous sums of money so that come contract time, I get a good portion of that, because then our lives get better. Back to your analogy of a rising tide lifting all boats. The sad reality is if some boats are bigger, you got yachts going up against little dinghies, we're getting crushed, which is why, again, when you collectively bargain, you come together, you have more strength and more power. But, you know, I come back to this, and this is kind of where I want to wrap things up. You know, if that organizing isn't possible, if you're, again, separated and divided as we've been for the better past of my working life, we end up with a declining standard of living. And we're seeing now wages going up because unions are winning elections. In your view, you know, come November, you know, which economy are we looking towards? And I know the answer, but I want you to say it.
Look, we got to have an economy that puts workers first. That's simple. That's easy. That's been our experience the last 3.5 years, where our members, building trades members, unionized members in all sectors, whether they're public employees, private sector, or anywhere in between, where we've had an opportunity to collectively bargain, to be able to go partner with our employers, partner with corporate America, and say, look, we just want our fair share. We want a piece of that pie. We want to be able to feed our families, not have to rely on the federal government or state government for subsidies, which a lot of our members, a lot of non-union workers, whether they're laborers, whether they're in public sector, private sector, industrial sector, when they're not unionized, they're relying on the federal government, they're relying on the state government. They're relying on those subsidies. So it makes all the sense in the world. Let's put workers first in this country again. Let's let workers join together. Let's let them collectively bargain. And then let's let them build the middle class so that we have an economy that when our members have more money in their paycheck, they're giving back to the economy. They're spending money. They're buying houses. They're buying cars. They're buying goods and services. when that happens, everybody wins. And we're looking for a win for the American people, a win for corporate America, for our contractor partners, and quite frankly, a win for federal and state governments, because we're building this this country's infrastructure, manufacturing sectors, energy sectors, and everywhere where we represent laborers. So we are convinced, and we know that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are the two people that are going to put workers first and allow us to build this country from the middle class up, and have the unions be a big part of that.
There you go. Brent, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Always great seeing you. I hope you'll come back again and talk to us real soon. And keep up the great work.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Brent Booker, General President of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. You can check out their website, liuna.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. But I think it's a pretty simple choice. Simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, low in the upper 30s. Clouds return tomorrow, high to the mid-60s. In the late afternoon and evening, showers and storms around. Sunny and upper 50s Friday and Saturday. Highs warm to the low 60s Sunday, mostly sunny. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Matt Nair on Air.
Vice President and Director of Marketing for Versity, Gretchen Jameson, is with us.
When you donate blood, there's a couple of different products, if you will, that your blood can produce. There's whole blood. You can do platelets every 2 weeks. You can be a double red, which is what you do.
Yes. For me personally, whatever I can do to maximize my gift, as you say, is worth it.
So you can go to Versity.org and take a look at all the different ways to donate and give.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, yesterday on the program, you may remember we had Kenneth Stribling on the program. He's the president of the National United Committee to Protect Pensions. They're the folks who, for the better part of the last decade, have been lobbying to ensure that multi-employer pension funds are backed up, something that Kamala Harris cast the deciding vote to ensure that people who spent their entire lives working, playing by the rules, that they actually do get, they get to keep what they've earned. Not even get ahead, just keep what they've earned. And for me, that's an extremely important thing. And which is why, I'm baffled and why Sean O'Brien and the Teamsters refused to support Kamala Harris and endorse her in this campaign. This should have been enough. This is, to steal a Bidenism, kind of a big freaking deal. But here to share some thoughts on how they got this done, how the process of fighting what seemed like overwhelming odds, how they fought and won this campaign, I've asked Dana Vargo to come talk with us. She's the communications director for the National United Committee to Protect Pensions. You can check out their website, UCP. I'll get it, NUCPP.org. We'll get links out on social media. Dana, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So walk me through this process, because, you know, I remember back in 2012, Bob Casey and I had done an event to talk about this issue, to move a piece of legislation that he was sponsoring to ensure that multi-employer pension funds didn't go belly up and, well, end up screwing a generation of workers out of their promises. Finally Biden gets it done years later. Walk me through what that was like, finding out that, you know, the promise that you were made, that your husband was made, the promise that you were depending on might not happen.
Well, I actually worked at a bank. My husband was the Teamster, and we had both just retired when he got the letter saying that his pension was going to be cut 58%. You can imagine how devastating that is. It wasn't in our plan at all. So the next day we went to a local Teamster retirees meeting, and everyone just sat there in shock. And it's like, you know, what are we going to do? And everyone kind of felt like, well, what can we do? So, you know, of course, that's not enough in a situation like that. So fortunately, through a couple of friends and through Facebook, we found out about a meeting that was being held in Akron, Ohio. We live near Canton, Ohio, so about a half hour away. And we went to this meeting, and Mike Walden was the head of the meeting, was the head of the committee, and he had been going to Washington for a couple of years at that point, trying to fight this before it all came to a head. So they were already well engaged and well on the way. So we got together with them, and it kind of just started rolling. We went to Washington every month, if not a couple times a month. At first, everything was on our own dime. You had to pay for your hotel, your gas, everything was on your own. But, you know, what are you going to do? Take a 58% cut or do that? So the part that that I found the most upsetting, well, you know, or at least upsetting, mostly when we went to Washington, it was the Teamsters that went, the guys went, because some of the wives either weren't able to go or for health reasons or whatever, but mostly it was the guys that went.
Right.
But when we would travel around to all of these committee meetings, there would be a lot of the wives there. And they, in the most part, especially on your over-the-road Teamsters, they didn't work outside of the home. They stayed home because somebody had to stay home with the kids. Somebody had to be there for doctor appointments and, you know, activities. So the wives typically stayed home, especially in a little bit, the ones a little bit older than me. So it was very common for the wife to have stayed home. And so when the husband had retired, they signed up for a spousal benefit, which they would have only gotten a percentage. They wouldn't have gotten the full amount. Well, now you figure I'm already going to get only a percentage. Now there's going to be a 58, maybe a 70% cut on top of that. Well, how am I going to live like that? Those ladies wouldn't have even had much Social Security coming because they didn't work.
No, you've told the story of my grandmother, because my grandfather retired, got a Teamster pension through Central States. He retired with local 407. And my grandmother, who passed in 2016, at the beginning of this was worried that what little she got from the, as you pointed out, the survivor benefit, which is a portion of what they got while he was still alive, they were worried they were going to cut that even further. And to be honest, it wasn't an awful lot of money to begin with. So to have that cut even further was a real struggle for her. You know, unfortunately, she had her own pension through the UFCW, the little bit that she got from my grandfather after he passed, Social Security, and the savings they had. She was able to lead her life in her own home. But I can't imagine, you know, someone in a worse position, someone who didn't have the ability to save a little bit or have their own pension. I can't imagine what that would have meant.
For sure. And, you know, they probably, I mean, where are they even going to go get a job? Their life was built around their family. Right. They didn't have an outside resource.
No, that's the story of my wife as well. To be, you know, quite frank, you know, my wife stayed at home, raised our children while I was out working, and she doesn't have a pension other than what we've put in an IRA over the years to build up some retirement savings. But, you know, in the event that something happens to me, that pension that I get, that was supposed to help.
Right. And so we would go around, we traveled a lot all those years, and we went around to all the different, in addition going to Washington, we would go around to all the committee meetings all over Ohio and elsewhere. And it was always so heartbreaking. These women would know that, you know, that I went all the time and we had a relationship, and they'd be like, did you get it fixed yet? Like, no, not yet. You know, and it was, I almost hated to go to the meetings because I just, they, you know, there were different times when we thought the Butch Lewis was going to get passed. I mean, there were so many ups and downs to that road.
Yeah.
And that it was heartbreaking when you had to tell them, no, it didn't get passed yet. You know, and then when we started getting closer to, you know, we even as a board member with the NUCPP, we even met with the Trump administration We didn't meet with the president at the time, but we met with his upper level staffers, explained the situation to them, told them, you know, the dire need that we were in. And they said, oh, they would try to help. But, you know, the end of the story, that didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
The same way. The same way when we met with Mnuchin and the Treasury, we met with both sides of the aisle, and both sides of the aisle was always, oh, well, some of them weren't even nice about it, but some of them, oh, understand, and that's terrible, and we really need to help you.
Well, you should. No, look, and the sad reality is this was a political issue during that time frame, and I remember arguing about this during the Trump years, and I'm not going to pull you into the political, you know, machinations of Washington, but the reality is there were very few Republicans, if any, that I could find that were on board with it, as it was in the Butch Lewis Act. There were most of the Democrats were on board. It just didn't seem to have the kind of push that we needed to get the political will to get it done. It was Joe Biden who got that done. And I'm not going to give pretty much anybody else credit for pushing that to the forefront. Kamala Harris cast the deciding vote. She earned that credit. But it was Biden who put that, I think, front and foremost.
Oh, for sure. Once he was elected, we were writing letters every day to the White House. Please make this within your 100 days. Never really thinking that it would be 49 days that it would get passed. I mean, it was really, we will be forever grateful to that administration. No. Because nobody else was getting it done for us. Though between President Biden and Kamala Harris and all of the Democratic senators and House members, I mean, without them, because I'm sure you know, not one single Republican voted for it. Not one.
No, not one.
Despite all the promises that they made us, not one could pull themselves across, and it was very disappointing. You know,
I'm sure there were 1,000 other reasons. This wasn't one. I'm sure they'll tell you that. But ultimately, they failed to stand up for working people in this moment, which is why I look at the fact that your organization, the National United Committee to Protect Pensions, has endorsed Kamala Harris for president. And it should be a no-brainer. She cast the deciding vote. Trump had 4 years to do something, did nothing. This seems simple to me.
Right. Shortly before the election, we had an announcement that something was going to happen that day with the pension. And it was Peter Navarro came out and said that within 120 days, something was going to get fixed. The pensions would get fixed. But of course, that was after the election. So,
of course,
keep
holding your breath. Is it basically what he's telling you? Keep holding your breath.
But, the important thing is that it was saved by President Biden and along with Kamala Harris, and they kept their promise, and we had a lot of broken promises. And I know that you probably know Rita Lewis, always, her husband always said, a promise is a promise is a promise. And that's true. And there were a lot of promises made, but a lot of them were not kept.
Well, this one, Joe Biden kept. So let me ask you this, because this is a huge victory. I can't imagine how happy you were to know that you're not going to have to eat cat food in your retirement, that the promises that you worked for, the pension that you earned is going to be there. What now? I mean, clearly there's a fight to be had. I'm sure you're seeing Social Security like I am. Is this the next battle for you guys?
It is. When the pension was saved, the board met and we tried to determine, do we just ride off into the sunset like we would like to, and just enjoy the retirement that we fought for? And then we start hearing the rumblings of issues with Social Security. And you're thinking, never could we get this grassroots movement together again like we had then. And we just felt that we owed it to everyone to stay on board. We now are watchdogs for all of the retirement security issues. So we've got our thumb on the Social. We're involved in a lot of committees. We are involved with, we have a lot of partners, including like the Alliance for Retired Americans. We have a lot of really good organizations that we are partnered with that keeping our thumb on what's happening with Social Security, Medicare, other pensions. So we're just still plugging along, just worried about making sure that the promises that, you know, you keep hearing things with the campaigns, yeah, that, oh no, they're not going to cut Social Security. Okay, then why is there the commission that's meeting behind closed doors? Why is there one? So it's those kind of things. So we don't feel like we can safely ride off yet. We have to see what happens with the election and then get the next game plan in order.
No, and look, the fight continues because, you know, you said a moment ago you could have lost 58% of the pension that you earned from working, the Social Security that you have paid into, that you expect in retirement. You know, there's talk in a couple of years, if nothing is done, the cut of like 23%, I think the number was. And if Trump gets his way and does everything that he's running on right now, you could see upwards of a 61% cut in a couple of years. So put that math together, a 58% cut to your pension, a 61% cut in 2031 to your Social Security. How do retirees, how does a generation like yourself, how do you survive?
Well, and, you know, there's a lot of people, and I hope that people are understanding this is a bipartisan issue.
It's a nonpartisan issue. It should be a nonpartisan. It affects everyone equally. Red hat, blue hat, green hat, pink hat, don't care. It's a nonpartisan issue.
You know, and fortunately, we have the pension. A lot of people don't have a pension. And all you have is Social Security and whatever, you know, savings you have. So everyone should have their finger on the pulse of this Social Security issue because, you know, we don't want to have to live with our kids.
Right.
We want to be able to still contribute to our church, to our small businesses, to our communities. And then you have to also keep in mind in the big picture thing, all the veterans that are affected by this. And so, you know, we love our veterans, and because many of them fought right with us after they'd already done their part. And so, I mean, everyone should be worried. Everybody should not be listening to what you're just hearing up front. You need to be looking behind the scene and see what's really being said.
So let me ask you, what are you, I know this is new. You guys are, you have this victory that you've been celebrating and congratulations. As you move to this next phase, you know, what are we then advocating for? Some people say we should scrap the cap and, you know, tax, you know, everybody on income up to a certain point. Some people are saying they need benefit cuts. You know, Nikki Haley and that crowd are saying push retirement off for my children to age 70 or 75. What are we advocating for? What direction are you looking to go?
We are looking for the cap to be taken off, and we are looking for enhancements to be made to Social Security. Nothing has been done in 50 years on Social Security, and so that needs to be done. We don't need to be working longer. Our Teamster brothers and sisters do not need to be driving longer. They're not sitting at a desk. I can say sitting at a desk because I sat at a desk. And I don't mean that, you know, I don't mean that as that that's not a good job. What I'm saying is it's not a physical job. And all these jobs that are so physical, do you really want these truck drivers out there driving, you know, 72, 75 years old, unlimited hours? That could possibly happen if they start taking off some of the limits and some of the things that you see in Project 2025, you know, I mean, they start taking off some of those regulations and you can work unlimited hours without overtime. I don't know, you know, you're asking for something really terrible to be happening. And plus they, you know, if you have to work longer, essentially that's a cut in your Social Security. People don't want to look at it that way because they don't point it out that way, but it is.
You're absolutely, you know, right.
So it just needs to, everybody needs to pay their fair share. We're not asking for more than that. I mean, I know that's kind of, it almost is like a redundant phrase because you hear it all the time, but isn't that the way it should be? I mean, we're as good as anybody else. And so, you know, everybody should pay their fair share and then we could all live together in harmony, you know?
There's a song about that during your generation, I'm sure. the website, NUCPP.org. We'll get links out on social media. The National United Committee to Protect Pensions, their communications director, Dana Vargo. I appreciate you taking time. Keep up the great work as you continue. Please come back. Share with us your advocacy. Share with us your victories.
I will. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, Dana. I appreciate it. Again, NUCPP.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. And also, maybe you want to get involved. There's a thought. Advocate for your own retirement security. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. At 1:05 in the afternoon, a massive explosion rocked the town of Pasadena, Texas, near Houston. The explosion was so large it registered a 3.5 on the Richter scale. The disaster took place at the Phillips Petroleum Company's Houston Chemical Complex. The Pasadena facility produces plastics. The fire started when highly flammable gas was released from an improperly connected valve. 23 workers were killed. More than 300 more were injured. The Houston Chronicle described the devastating impact of the explosion, writing, "Entire buildings vanished as a huge black smoke plume billowed skyward in an almost apocalyptic vision. Homes as far as 8 miles away were damaged." After the explosion, the company rebuilt its facilities. A year after the disaster, Tom Gentry, president of the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Local 4-227, thought the company could do more to improve workplace safety. He told a Chronicle reporter, "The company still uses outside contractors with less safety training, and workers become tired because of bare-bones staffing. At the time of the explosion, there were 905 company workers, and an additional 600 contracted employees who worked at the facilities. OSHA found multiple safety violations. The company eventually came to an agreement with OSHA and paid a $4 million fine. In 1999, another explosion killed two workers at the Pasadena facility. The next year, yet another explosion killed one worker and injured 71. The company continued to hire contracted employees. After the third explosion in 11 years, Joe Campbell, secretary treasurer of the paper Allied Industrial Chemical and Energy Workers International, said the company continued to hire contractors who have little or no experience working in a volatile workplace.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Stop and put yourself in that position for a moment, you know, and thinking about what Dana and her husband were looking at. A 58% cut to the pension that they had spent their entire lives working to get. 58% of what they had assumed and planned their retirement on just being yanked away. And this is where, again, I come down to the political, the red hat, blue hat, because that's the reality. You heard Dana say no Republicans came to the rescue. No Republicans came and said, hey, let's figure out a solution. No Republicans offered anything other than lip service. Donald Trump had 4 years to do something. She said they went to him right away. And, oh, yeah, we'll candidate. Oh, yeah, we'll do it. But as president, nothing. And look, I remember going through all of this, you know, from 2012 forward, and the Republican Party being wholeheartedly against it. And you stop and you think about the auto industry, when during the Obama years, the auto industry did go through a controlled bankruptcy eventually, but the workers didn't get screwed out of their pensions. And if you listen to conservatives today, that's their greatest anger, is that in that auto bailout, the companies were made okay, but the workers got they were okay too. That's what they're mad about. And, you know, we've gone through decades of working people getting screwed over. And I had talked about the Butch Lewis Act for years. We had people on this program talking about how important it is to shore up the multi-employer pension fund. to ensure that people who spent their lives working to get to that golden era would be cared for. Now stop and think about what Republicans and conservative pro-business ideology has gotten us. Think about the situation they've put this country in. This deference to corporate America, this deference to profit, this worship at the holy altar of the quote-unquote free market. What it's gotten us is a system that worked really well for my grandparents. They worked their entire lives. They worked hard. They played by the rules. They got ahead. They were able to raise children in a home that they owned, that they lived into the day they each died. With dignity, with respect, and not in poverty. What I think all of us kind of want to have, that kind of life of independence, that kind of a life of saying that we can take care of ourselves, and that if we work hard, play by the rules, we should, damn it, we should get ahead. We should be okay. So to then have someone say, well, you know, the pension system is going belly up. You're going to have to take a 58% haircut, while Social Security is saying, hey, you know, 2031, we might have to cut 23% of the benefits there. You know, people who are retiring now or about to retire, they're going to take it on the chin because of bad conservative Republican economic ideology. That's what got us here. Massive tax cuts for corporate America, massive tax cuts for the very wealthy, all kinds of handouts and sweeteners and everything you could want for corporate America. Deregulate, do all of that. Understand, the multi-employer funds are in trouble because union density has fallen, because those are mostly union pension funds. If you don't have members paying in, you have a problem. And when I started in the LTL industry, the less than truckload industry, it was 85% unionized. It's down to about 10% now. And you go, well, that's because the unions didn't organize. No, it's because the laws are so badly broken. The pendulum has swung so far to the moneyed interests. And the moneyed interests aren't you and me. They've got us fighting over nonsense. Who goes to what bathroom? I don't care. You know what I care about? I care about Dana and her husband almost lost 58% of their pension. And because of Joe Biden, it got on the agenda. And because of Kamala Harris, it passed out of the Senate. And because the Democrats controlled the House, it got passed out of the House. This happened because of the Democratic Party. And to hear Sean O'Brien say, whoa, I don't know. You know, we're not going to pick sides, is leadership malpractice, plain and simple. And the reason I keep coming back to this is because our media structure keeps playing this, well, you know, there's a different, there, you know, they can't decide. Labor can't decide. Labor has decided. Joe Biden has been the best president for workers in my lifetime. Kamala Harris will pick up that mantle and she will move it forward. That simple. So to hear the corporate control, their mainstream mouthpieces kind of blathering on about there's a division. Unions are pretty well, the leadership pretty well, they get it. They get what Donald Trump is going to be, and that's bad. They get what Project 2025 is going to be. That's bad. And the reality is, and until we wake up to that reality, that they're bad, we're going to keep getting the outcomes that we've gotten. We're going to continue to be in this position where we're struggling and taking it on the chin. And look, every attempt to save ourselves is met with another outrage du jour, because it's where we've been for the last several years. It's whatever the latest outrage is, that's what they keep feeding us. That's the crap they keep throwing down our throats. And until we say no more, this is what we're going to get. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you ready for the haircut that's coming to Social Security? If we continue to do nothing, or are we going to finally do something about it? And it starts in November. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Podcast. We'll see you back here next time. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.